So hello everybody and a warm welcome. Whenever I say a word like warm or cold, I'm reminded of the subject of the evening, which is the four elements. And I thought that it might be nice to just reconnect a little bit with those aspects of nature within our bodies, but also by extension in the external world, especially at a time when there's so much destruction of the climate, so much exploitation of this planet. And we seem to have in many ways forgotten our connection or lost that connection, and this causes a great amount of suffering. And I think as practitioners, you know, our job is to try to understand nature, right, the reality as it is and as it can be experienced. And one of the really powerful ways of doing this is to practice what's known as the four elements meditation. So I'm going to run us through a little guided meditation on that, and we can see if we can actually have some direct experience of what these things are, not as concepts but as felt qualities in the body. And as I say, the same qualities that are observable in the external world as well. So I thought we'd begin with about 25 minutes, I guess, of meditation, and then I'll give a little reflection on some of the benefits we can get from this practice and where it sits within the wider Buddhist teachings, and encourage you to make it a part of your practice, make it one of the tools that you can use to develop your wisdom and insight. And it also, depending how you practice four elements meditation, can lead to fairly deep samadhi. So that can also form a foundation and a platform for even deeper insights into the nature of mind and matter, starting with matter now with the elements, but by extension we can get much clearer on which qualities relate to our mind. So shall we start by just getting ourselves really comfortable and making a ambient atmosphere for practice. So last time there wasn't such a big group as this, and we did some death contemplation. Because there are only a few people, I offered for people to lie on the ground. If you can find a space on the ground, you're feeling really weary, and that sounds good for you, then why not? Earth to earth. But if you prefer, you can sit on the chair.
I might go over there, actually. That's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Please feel welcome. Only the teacher can't really follow their own advice on that. Can't really lead it like that. Is everyone warm enough, first of all? Because apparently there is some heating that can be turned on, if not. Anyone cold? All good. A bit cold? Yeah.
Shall we put something on?
Yeah, maybe.
Is there one behind you or not?
Oh, yes. There's another wearing it.
And there are more blankets. Do you want a blanket?
So we're already practicing the element meditation by just trying to take care of our bodies and get as comfortable as we can. And this is not something unnecessary, it's something really important that actually starts to develop a really compassionate and kind relationship towards our bodies, which we tend to really push around. I don't know about you, but I feel it creates a nice atmosphere too, where people are looking out for one another, sharing their blankies. Alright, so I thought that we could do a little body scan, and this meditation is inspired by one of my bhikkhuni elders, Ayur Santacitta, I was listening to this particular, something similar to this recently, and I thought it might work well. So there are different ways of practicing with the elements, and this is a simplified version because we don't have time to go into each and every attribute of each element, earth, water, fire and air, but just to get a sense of each. We'll see if we get into the space element as well. So perhaps a good place to start is with earth. And perhaps noticing your connection to the ground, to the floor if you're lying down. So any parts of the body that are feeling grounded. And the earth element is the field of weight, from heaviness to lightness. Also texture, roughness, smoothness, and density, hardness or softness. All the degrees between these opposites are qualities of the earth element, which can be physically felt. So perhaps just noticing any sense of heaviness in your body right now. Feelings of weight, where your buttocks meet the chair. Feeling the weight of the body on the buttocks. Maybe feeling the weight of your arms, your hands on your lap. The weight of your head on your neck. Characteristics of the earth element. Noticing the stability, the sense of solidity that this element provides. Sense of stillness in the body. A sense of groundedness, steadiness, perhaps also in the mind. And from the top of the head, we can also sense into the quality of hardness. An easy way to feel this property is to feel your teeth. Maybe gently clench them together. Can you experience the quality of hardness? Same quality is found in the skull. Earth element. A Again, noticing that hardness in your teeth, your jaw. Hardness of the bones, the spinal cord starting from the neck. The quality of hardness in your shoulders, earth element. Just as there's earth element in your body, in the teeth, in the bones, there's earth element in the world outside, in the mountains, in the earth herself. No difference, the same element. Noticing hardness through your whole spine. In your hip bones. In your legs. Maybe again feeling heaviness. Heaviness of the thighs. Along with the hardness of the bones, the kneecaps. Earth element. Inseparable from the earth element in the external world. Not mine, not a self. Not mine to own. Earth element in the food we eat. A constant exchange between earth element externally, earth element internally. Till eventually the earth element in our body returns to the earth element outside. Feeling the earth element in your legs, your feet. And the ground beneath the feet. Noticing the hardness, the texture. The sense of solidity, stability of the earth element inside and outside. No difference between the two. And as you move from the tips of your toes, we're going to move back up the body. Just sensing the fire element, the field of temperature from coolness, coldness, to warmth, to heat. The whole range of temperature is the quality of fire element. There's a temperature in your feet. Maybe you can sense the temperature externally, the skin level, where the skin meets the air. moving up through the legs, noticing the fire element, keeping your body at just the right temperature between about 37 and a half to 38 or less degrees. It's very small category within which the body can thrive. Fire element through the legs, through the thighs. Noticing which parts of the thighs feel warmer, maybe where they make contact with the chair. Maybe the heavier parts, where earth element is predominant. Moving through your whole torso, noticing any changes of temperature throughout the torso. Properties of fire element. Fire element internally, fire element externally is the same. Fire element of the sun. Fire element in ice, which is solid, hard. Properties of earth, fire, water, and also movement, oscillation, wind element. Noticing the whole field of temperature through your body, from your fingertips up to your shoulders. Self. An impersonal process, a constant exchange with fire element inside, fire element outside. No difference at all. Noticing the different temperatures in your mouth, maybe warmer than the skin. The temperature maybe of your breath, of the air moving in and out of your body. And the temperature on the scalp. Don't need to worry about it, change it. Just noticing. Fire element as a direct experience. In constant change. And now scanning through the body for the water element. Sometimes a little harder to detect. Its characteristic is liquidity, fluidity, cohesion. And the liquid parts of the body, always in a flow, that hold this body together in a certain shape. You might be able to sense it in the moisture in the eyeballs, which also have a temperature. Water element, internally the same, no different from water element in the rivers, in the oceans, in the rain. Noticing the water element in your saliva, the quality of liquidity, wetness. Sensing it in the blood that flows around your body. As you move your awareness through the neck, the shoulders, down your arms, everything's bound up in this body, bound together through water element. And the water element also flows through your body as blood carrying oxygen, as organic liquids. Urine, mucus, lymph, lymphatic fluid. Sensing the water element inside the body, through your torso, down through your legs. Through your feet, the water element transporting oxygen throughout your body through the blood, which also has a temperature. Earth, fire and water working together in a constant flow and flux. And from the tips of your toes, now sensing the air element, whose characteristic is movement. Pulsation, oscillation, vibration, perhaps felt as tingling in the toes, perhaps experienced directly as change, changing sensations through your feet, your ankles, through your shins, air element, perhaps the most intimately connected element to this life. The element we can't do without for more than 2 or 3 minutes. Without air, we will die. Air element, constant exchange between air element inside and air element outside. No separation, no difference at all. noticing air element in your legs and your thighs. Experienced as movement or change. Maybe pulsing or prickling, maybe rapture. Felt in your abdomen as it expands and contracts with the breath. Air element, no different from the wind. Always changing, beyond our control, not mine, not a self, just an impersonal process of wind element in this body and outside. Feeling the air element in your lungs and the air element also is responsible for pressure, for resistance, the breath coming in contact with the diaphragm is the air element meeting the earth element. The hardness of the diaphragm, the movement of the abdomen. There's a temperature to the breath. And all this is held together by the water element, cohesion. Moving up to your shoulders and then beginning from your fingertips. Noticing all the subtle movements, perhaps sensed as physical bodily sensations, directly experienced as impersonal processes, dissolving the fixed idea, solid idea of a separate self, a self that can exist apart from nature. Moving up through your neck, noticing the touch of the air, the back of the throat, or the palate, in the nostrils, until you reach the top of the head. And then just allowing yourself to feel the whole body. Whatever sensations manifest right now for you. Notice if there's a predominance of earth element in a particular sensation, maybe heaviness or lightness, or temperature, coldness, warmth, heat. Tingling, movement, air element, and the whole body bound up held together by the water element. All these elements do not belong to me. I'm inseparable from nature. With the death of this body, all these elements go back to earth, go back to the fire element, the water element. The liquids will flow out from the body. And the earth element. Dust returning to dust. Just feeling once again that connection with the ground, with the chair. Feeling a sense of yourself sitting embodied. You're connected to the environment around you, connected to the other people in this room. Just as my body has is nothing but these four elements, along with space. So everyone else's body is of the same nature, nothing but four or five elements. No different from the world outside. Hardness inside, hardness outside. Warmth inside, warmth outside. Just an artificial distinction. We're not part of nature, but we are. Nature itself. How can we own the gifts of nature? How could something that's changing be a self? Just feeling your feet on the ground once again, or your body touching the floor. And when you're ready, we can come out of the meditation, or if you wish, you can continue. And maybe if you do open your eyes, you'll notice the same elements you just experienced outside. Hello, elements. It's amazing, really, to think that our bodies are comprised of only these things, but in exactly the right proportion to keep us alive, right? There's such a thin margin there. So, as I said at the beginning, I thought this would be a good theme to help us reconnect with nature and with ourselves as a part of nature. It's a particularly pertinent topic, I think, at springtime when nature's in full bloom, and it becomes a great, for me anyway, a really calming and nourishing aspect of my life. So you're kind of the guinea pigs, because I'm doing a whole day retreat on this in London, so I wanted to kind of flesh out some of the ideas that I had. And also, just see if we can get a sort of preliminary overview of the Buddha's teachings on this, because it's quite a big topic. I can't go into detail on every place that it's mentioned. But hopefully you've had a little bit of experience already just now. Could anyone not experience what was meant by these elements? Is that a no? How about water element? That's usually the hardest, actually, to get a sense of, because it's hard to have a direct experience of fluidity. But we can get a sense of it through the saliva, and sort of by inference, in a way. And this idea of water holding things together. Yeah. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Gurgling. That's also air, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose.
But they're all in everything, actually. Yeah. I mean, at the cellular level, I think every cell is comprised of all the elements. Mm-hmm. That's what we learned in Indian medicine, because this is a kind of ancient Indian scheme of understanding the world, like physicality, basically. And I studied Indian medicine for my degree. I wouldn't have been able to do that if I hadn't lived in India for a while, and I didn't even know it existed, of course, before I travelled there. But the whole medical system is based on this idea of the four elements, not as concepts, not even as kind of substances, but more as qualities and functions in the body. So, as I said, the earth element is its main function is, well, its main characteristic is solidity, right? And that is divided into things like heaviness, lightness, roughness, smoothness, softness and hardness. So these are qualities of the earth element, but also it gives that sense of stability to the mind and to the body. So sometimes it can be very useful in practice if we're feeling a little bit shaky or a bit perturbed by our day, which I imagine everybody is from time to time, to just reconnect with that earth element. And then the water element is the aspect of liquidity, and it kind of moves in a flowing way. Whereas the air element is more like oscillation or fluctuations. It's a little bit more subtle. It might be more localized in a sense, but water, if it doesn't have a boundary, will just flow away. And then the fire element, as well as the range of temperature, is also responsible for processes like the metabolic process, so digestion. If we have like too much fire element in the digestive system, then we don't digest things well. Things get kind of burned up, if you like. And if our fire element is too low in the digestive system, then we can't digest. We have what they call in Indian medicine as kind of kacha food, which is like unprocessed food, basically. And it leads to toxins in the body. But anyway, maybe that's going into a bit too much detail. But I thought that the four elements is a really beautiful, direct way to, in a sense, heal our relationship with the world that we have plundered and exploited beyond belief. And to do this by recognizing that these elements are inside and outside us. But there is also a great advantage to four element meditation in that for anyone who's practicing insight meditation, the great teacher Ledi Sayadaw, who is one of the teachers in my original lineage of teachings from Burma, said that a practice founded in the four elements quickly gains insight into impermanence. And it's almost seen as a fundamental aspect of understanding impermanence at a deeper level. And so without that understanding of the elemental nature of materiality, of matter, which of course is what the body is comprised of, we don't have the full insight into that particular aspect of existence, our own bodies, and by extension, the materiality at large. And I had the sort of experience of this because in my original practice, we used to meditate a lot with feelings in the body and to focus on the impermanent nature of those feelings. But what I realized was that although I could have a very direct sense of things arising and passing, and the more my mindfulness developed, the more kind of speedy this process of arising and passing seemed to be. So it was very obvious to me that things were dissolving at quite a speed. You know, the stronger the mindfulness became, the faster that process of arising and passing became, until it was clear that, you know, this body is impermanent. But I also realized I didn't have such a deep insight into why and how these sensations were arising in the first place, how they could be traced back. And the four element meditation was the missing piece. So I have practiced this fairly intensively in some retreats in Australia and also with my teacher from Myanmar. And just being able to relate some of the physical feelings that we have to one or the other of these elements is immensely helpful, not only to understand how they arise and why they feel the way they do, but also how impersonal they really are, how much they are just processes. They're just qualities that can be traced back to these elements. And we can have a direct experience through an embodied awareness of these elements of non-self, yeah, beyond the idea of non-self as a concept, because quite often we talk about it and it's almost unappealing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, there's no self. Yeah, but what about my pain? What about my, you know, what about the discrimination I experience as a non-binary person or as a bhikkhuni or as a person of colour? How can you say there's non-self? Because actually it seems to matter very much to everyone else or other people. How I refer to myself, you know, these designations, these apparent external designations that are used. But when we trace it back to that elemental level and we can start to sense these elements in an embodied way, it gives us a direct experience of what is meant by that. And it starts to dissolve those constructs of self and other, right? Of self and the world outside. This is only an artificial designation, really. There's no real separation. In the Indigenous Australian culture, they don't say they're part of nature, they say they are nature, right? It's not like we're just a part of it, like we somehow slot in somewhere. We are sustained by the earth, by the planet, by the mountains, by the trees, by the oxygen. We're no different. And our bodies go back to those elements when we die. So we can get this gradual breakdown of concepts, labels, names, etc., through having a direct experience of the elements in our bodies. You know, the external elements we can then observe. And it was really interesting for me when I practiced in Australia. It was a 5-week retreat with one of my teachers, and you know, we spent a whole day with a single aspect of an element. So hardness would be for the whole day, scanning the body for hardness again and again. And getting so familiar with that feeling and that kind of property that then when I would open my eyes and see the ground or see the wall, like now I'm doing it as well, it's like I could almost empathise with the door. Okay, the door doesn't feel hard, but I can feel what the door feels like. I'm just looking at it. I know it's dense, I know it's solid, I know it's smooth. And it's like, oh, it's just like the bones in the body. There's actually no separation, no difference there. So how can these bones be my bones? Right? Yeah. The place, I need to move on because these talks are often, yeah, more involved than I have time for. The place that this is taught, actually, in the suttas is the Satipatthana Sutta. There's quite a few suttas on the elements. But the Satipatthana Sutta puts element meditation in context. And it falls under what is known as Kayanapassana. Is everyone here familiar with the Satipatthana meditations? You need to be. You need to be. Okay, this is foundations of mindfulness. So this is where you direct your mindfulness to. It's one thing saying, you know, be mindful, we should be mindful, we need to be more aware. But the Buddha was saying there are certain areas of existence that we need to be aware of in order to gain insight that frees, a liberating insight that frees us from identifying with this mind-body phenomena. So those four areas are the area of the body, the feelings, which depend on the body, but are also mental feelings like happiness and sadness, pleasure and pain. Then the mind, states of mind, so whether the mind is expansive or contracted, like whether it's clear or cloudy. And then mental contents are thinking hindrances, basically. And also what's known as the enlightenment factors. But the four elements meditation is a foundational aspect of contemplation of the body, which is the first and most accessible way to begin. And the Buddha started off by getting us to establish a basic sense of mindfulness about body postures and movements of the body, etc. And then he taught the autonomical parts of the body. And this was the first kind of easy way in to start understanding what the body is comprised of. So things like, even at the ordination, like you did the novice ordination 4 months ago, and you had to remember five things. Do you remember them?
Kesa, Loma, Naka, Danta, Tacho.
Yay! So that means hair of the head, Kesa, Loma.
Hair of the body.
Hair of the body.
Nails.
Teeth.
And skin.
And skin. And these are the five that you learn. Do you know why? One thing is they are earth element, but the main reason is they're immediately visible. And that's what we see when we look at a person. I don't see your liver. I hope I don't see it. I don't see your blood, hopefully, unless you have an accident, and then I might. But I see your skin, your hair, your nails, your teeth, and that's what we get attracted to. Isn't that crazy? Like, if you say you're attracted to somebody, okay, you might be a bit deeper than that. You might be attracted to their energy or their character, great. But generally, physical attraction is basically the skin, the hair. As soon as you shave your head, you don't get a lot of attention as a woman anymore. Yay! Which is wonderful, and it's just the hair. And I've seen even monks say things like, oh, I just didn't recognise this person when they shave their hair because they have beautiful hair, you know. Beautiful hair, which when it comes in your porridge, my first teacher used to joke, you don't say beautiful hair, you say, get it out of my porridge. Why is it in my porridge? But that's what we see. They're the visible sort of aspects. And they're basically earth element, the external earth element. And then we move a bit deeper, and earth element is also part of the organs inside are predominantly earth as well. So the liver, the spleen, the lungs, I guess. Anything that's solid, dense, heavy is predominantly earth. So that's a slightly deeper experience, you know, that, or contemplation that requires more sensitive mindfulness, like a greater subtlety of mindfulness. So we start where it's easy. And then we move into the liquid elements of the body. So I tried to mention mucus already, but mucus. Jenny likes mucus. No, not really. Synovial fluid. What else? What else is liquid blood in the body? Saliva. Blood, of course. Saliva, snot. Anything that's urine. Sort of obvious. Urine, yeah. These are the water element.
Tears.
Sorry?
Tears.
Tears and sweat. Mm-hmm. Things like that is all the water element. We couldn't have it without the water element, right? These things are not ours. So if you have a lot of tears, you've just got a lot of water element. So what? That's okay. You don't need to judge these elements in the body, right? It's okay to cry. It's okay to shed tears. That's due to the water element. That's all. So if you're feeling teary, you just tell somebody, my water element's a little, you know, a little abundant today. Never mind. So basically the anatomical parts are mostly earth and water, and they're still quite conceptual. They're still designations. They involve labels. They involve a lot of conceptualizing, and that's not a direct experience, right? What we actually can feel are the qualities of the element. So this is the next contemplation in the sequence of the contemplations in the Satipatthana on the body. So the elemental contemplation, as I've said, is extremely powerful for overcoming or starting to kind of deconstruct apparent solidity and starting to see the impersonal nature of these phenomena. And we can have a direct embodied experience of non-self this way. Yeah. So this is a very powerful meditation, which, as well as dissecting and deconstructing our sense of self, can also give that sense of holding by being able to connect with the external world, you know, and not feel that we're alone. You know, okay, there's no self, there's nothing, there's just this black hole. No, we're part of nature, which is a really beautiful thing to remember. And nature has given us this gift of life, right? I wanted to read out a little quote from an Indigenous elder that I really like. And it kind of hints the sense of non-self from their understanding. We often think of ourselves as permanent fixtures in the grand scheme of things, which can lead to a sense of entitlement and dominance over nature and others. What if we saw ourselves as part of a much larger cycle? What if we truly understood that our time here is transient and that our primary task is to observe, to learn, to grow, and to love? It's beautiful, isn't it? And in a way, that's what we try to do in meditation, right? To understand that everything is transient, our bodies are impermanent, they go back to the elements in due course. And what do we do in meditation? Our primary task is to observe, right? Not to get involved, not to try and control or dominate our bodies and minds, not to tell them they must be this way, that way, you know, you need to fix yourself up. Imagine if you came here, I say, hey, stop it, you need to fix your posture. Sit up straight. It'd be horrible. So we observe, we learn from that observation. Without observing, without being able to hold something in mind for a long enough period of time, it can't really reveal its true nature to us. So the Four Elements meditation also helps us to understand the nature at, an experiential level of fundamental materiality, right? The aspect of matter, material. And we're not concerned with like an accurate scientific understanding, but one that helps us in this world. And to grow and to love. So to grow means to develop wholesome qualities in our minds. To observe in a way that actually leads to wholesome qualities arising and then increasing until they become fulfilled. And it's natural that when those beautiful qualities grow, the less helpful qualities decrease. So if we practice, you know, the meditation on the anatomical parts to the degree that repulsiveness arises or aversion arises, then it's not really very helpful. The whole point of these meditations is to get a more balanced perspective so we can see the body just as it is. It's just earth element, it's just blood, it's just phlegm. You know, nothing more than that. It's not mine. We very quickly spit out phlegm, right? Actually, in Asia, they laugh at the fact that we put it in a tissue and then put it in our pocket and take it away. That's kind of seen as pretty gross. But, you know, you don't want to, like, share it with anyone either. But, yeah, these things are not ours, right? So in the teaching that the Buddha gave, I think in the Majjhima number 28, the instruction, that's the Maha Hatipatopama Sutta. Yes, I remembered it. He says to the people he's teaching that the aim of these meditations is to understand it's just earth element and to see it with proper wisdom. This is not mine. This is not what I am. This is not a self. It's not mine, my earth element. It's when we think something's mine. Even where we live, you know, people are talking about this tree belongs to me. Oh, no, this tree belongs to that person. And everybody has rights on the trees and on the land. And, you know, at the actual level, nothing belongs to anybody. If anything, I read this recently in the book that you lent me. It's called Braiding Sweet Grass, if anybody wants to read this book. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's written by somebody with Indigenous heritage. I don't know to what extent, but her grandfather was an Indigenous Indian elder. I forget from which community. But she said something really beautiful in the book, that to become truly Indigenous to a place, you have to give and learn to receive from the land. It's only then that we can become truly Indigenous to a place. So again, it's that constant exchange. We need to nurture and tend to the land, to the planet we live on, with respect and with care. Also in the Indigenous Australian culture, they say, you know, we should tend and care for the planet or for the earth or for the elements in general as though they were our own family, as though it's no, as though we would tend and care for our own family, right? And she's saying that it's only then, and when we also learn to receive the gifts that the earth provides, that means receive, not plunder, not exploit, not covet, but to receive the gifts of the earth, that we can really say we're indigenous to a land, to a place. It's so beautiful. So this is one way that we can start to heal our relationship to the planet, to ourselves, and to also come in balance to some extent. It's interesting, I was thinking about this earlier, like how do we really practice this? And as I said, we can practice Four Elements Meditation in the traditional way of discerning their particular qualities, which is great because it builds a lot of mindfulness, it builds a lot of samadhi, and it's a very engaging and quite a fun practice to do. You know, you can take out a particular quality like hardness or heaviness, and it will have an effect on your mind. And I think it's really interesting to start seeing how these qualities, in a way, manifest in the mind as well. So if there's a lot of thinking, for example, it could be that there's an excess of air element. And how do you counter that? Look for the heaviness, look for the opposite. Look for the stillness, the stability of earth. Yeah? Or maybe there's too much rigidity in the mind, and sometimes that translates to the body, right? You're stiff, and the mind is kind of stuck. And then we can connect to the water element, to this idea of flowing. Flowing also allows things to flow out, to flow away. Not to intentionally let something go, as in throw something away, but just to let it, let yourself flow with experience, let yourself flow with life. The space element, which we didn't get into in the meditation, but space is like those areas of the body that are like cavities, right? The spatial aspect of the body in which things can move, which the other elements can, you know, do their thing because they're always moving. And just getting this sense of spaciousness, you know, feeling the body bound up with the water element, but then moving beyond, expanding that sense of spatial awareness to imagine that, yeah, there's more space for the mind. And this is very helpful for samadhi practice, actually. Samadhi practice is not this tight focus. I've got to be with the breath at all extents. It's something that includes everything and that gives the mind space to settle gradually so we can have both simultaneously a sense of spaciousness and also groundedness, also embodiment as well. Interestingly, I listened to another talk on the elements and I forget who was talking about this, but they were saying that one time they were getting very cold in their meditation. And they went to their teacher and she said, oh, try and examine why you're getting cold. And then she realised it's because she was getting bored. Actually getting bored and the mind was kind of turning off and the whole body energy metabolism was kind of cooling down. And then she realised to increase the heat, she should investigate. She should rouse energy, like mental energy, and investigate things with more care. And so when she started to investigate what was happening inside, then the heat started to come. So we can kind of, to some extent, balance these qualities and use the element meditation to nourish the mind. The two are, again, very interconnected. And yet there's also a difference there. And in the bigger picture, I think, with this element meditation, because it's mainly focused on understanding the body and the nature of materiality, by extension, when we become very clear about what is body, what is matter, we're much more clear about what is mind. So the mental aspects of this whole body-mind phenomena, the feeling, it's a mental aspect, the perceptions, the mental formations and the consciousness are different. And yet they also come under the same nature of being impermanent and not self. So the Four Elements Meditation, I think Shaila Catherine says, it's like a really excellent vantage point from which to understand the nature of life itself. First of all, the nature of matter, but then the nature of everything that we take to be a self. Yeah. So if you haven't tried Four Element Meditation very much, I very much encourage it. You can pick different qualities at different times, especially if you're on a long retreat. It's great if you get a teacher who's like practice this for a while, and they can take you through each and every one and how they interrelate with each other. And you start to notice the impermanence in them as well, how there could be a predominance of one and another, and they kind of, yeah, interact with each other. But I remember during one of the earth elements, actually, it was the softness. It was really beautiful because I was just focusing on softness in the body, you know, for like a whole day or maybe longer. And it made my mind also really soft. And it's all part of training in perception. It's all part of like having fun, you know, with the way we use our mind to be aware. And just how much insight that can give us into the conditioned nature of what we see and how we perceive. And again, to use that kind of yardstick of learning to see things in ways that increases a sense of well-being, increases a sense of non-clinging, increases our ability to let go and to reconnect with life. So this is my reflection on the elements for today, and I'd like to give some time for any questions or comments as well. Actually, maybe I'm short-sighted and long-sighted. So would anyone like to share any reflections that you've had, or any questions or experience of the meditation, or anything really related to practice in some way?
You know, what you said that was complicated, I thought was complicated, about the water. Where did the water hold it together, the body together and not earth, you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. Why does water hold the body together and not earth? Who knows? I guess people have figured this out somehow, and it's a way to describe the body. But what is important to understand is that the four elements are in every cell. I mean, no cell has, you know, only one or two of them. So even something like a river, it looks like it's water element, but it also has, well, it has a shape, which is also water element. It also has a temperature. It also has, like, the oscillation of the particles, which is air element. I was thinking about how it's earth element, and I was blank, but I think there's all these elements in every cell. So, yeah, I guess it's the cohesive property. One way that I've heard people describe it is like, if you have earth element without water element, it's like having a pile of sawdust, or it's like having a bag of flour. When you add the water element, it makes a dough, and it's only with the water element, the water itself, that it forms a ball. So in that way, it brings things in, it brings things together. But it's quite a difficult one to experience, unless we can just sort of take the body and the sort of sense of the shape of the body and recognise that it's contained. But yeah, there's earth element in the skin as well as water. So, yeah. But that's one way to explain it, that the water brings things together and sticks. Like a cake. Like a glue. Like a cake, yes. Yes.
Well, I think that reminds me of, like, one of the... I had a lot of quite nice associations of kind of... I found it difficult to distinguish between the earth hardness element and the water in the guided meditation, but in a nice way, I think, where I had sort of associations of like mudslides and like soft river banks that kind of dissolve into a flowing river.
Yeah.
I kind of felt that they integrated in a way,
those two. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And then I wanted to share just a comment, but I wonder if you maybe had a comment on that. You said that the fire element is related to digestion.
Yeah, partly, yeah. Yeah. That's one of its functions.
Because
yeah.
I once had quite strong... I was fasting for 3 days once, and I noticed that when... At one some point, it was as though the digestion system just kind of stopped really being active.
Yeah.
And that sense of centeredness I usually have in my body, I was like... It felt as though I realized that how grounded that was in the digestive system.
Yeah.
And when then kind of sort of stopped functioning to the same extent, I felt much less separated from the outside world and nature. And it was as though that kind of feeling of centeredness just like dissolved.
Well, interesting,
But that would be related to the fire element specifically, right? Then, if it's the digestive.
I mean, again, all the elements are involved in everything. So dissolution is usually sort of related a bit to the air element as well, but all of them, because they all dissolve. And one of the translations for Rupa, one of the aspects of it generally, of matter, of every element, is dissolution.
Mm.
So it's a combination, but yeah, I think it sounds as though the fire element decreased, and then it makes sense that there was this feeling of like less solidity or less separation.
And lightness as well.
Lightness, yeah, which is earth element. I think one of the main points of all of this is it's really helpful to start to notice what arises due to the elements, because again it depersonalizes things, makes of course a lot more equanimity as well. We didn't get onto that, but one of the other benefits from element meditation is a sense of equanimity and patience. And the Buddha taught this also to his son and said, you know, be like the earth, Rahula, be like the earth. You know, the earth has all kinds of things thrown upon it and all kinds of, you know, things happen to the earth, but the earth remains, in place in a sense. It's not repelled, humiliated, or disgusted. And so in the same way, if people revile and scold you, just be like the earth, be patient. So yeah, that's another way to use the element meditation. But yeah, to have a sense of the causality behind what we feel and what's happening in our body, so that we can depersonalize it, but not to get too caught up in the which element is this, is it this, is it that, because then it goes into kind of a lot of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Has anyone never practiced element meditation? Is there anyone? Or has anyone ever? You didn't practice it, yeah. Anyone interested to practice it more often? Yeah, good,
great, super. There's a nun on Dharma Seed, I think it's she's the one you mentioned who does a lot of that.
Santa Chitta. Yeah, because she's very much into like eco dharma. She's got a place in California called the Earth.
Aloka Earth Room.
She was with Aloka Vihara before, and then the bhikkhunis went separate ways, and they've got all their own viharas now. Vihara is like a monastery of any size. So she lives in San Francisco. Yeah, it's very into element meditation. There are different ways to teach it. There's also kind of methods based more, well, that you find in the Visuddhimagga, which is more like these qualities, but I like that because they're direct experiences in the body. But I think it's important, you know, to recognise that as the elements are inside us, so also they're outside. That's one of the ways that it starts to dissolve that sense of taking the body to be me.
I noticed my bones felt a real kinship with bones in the ground during that.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. It was.
Hope they're not too high. Too much.
No, they're okay where they are for now.
Yeah.
But
nice. There was a real kind of felt sense of, oh yeah, it's the same thing.
Did it take away fear or sense of reality or?
Or just kinship, something of being the same.
I
feel like that when I'm swimming, when I'm on the beach or in any water. I'm just very attracted to water.
Mm.
I just feel so at one.
Our bodies are mostly water, right? 75% water or something.
More even,
yeah.
The brain is like mostly really. So I guess so connected.
Yeah, I love water.
It's
very holding, isn't it? I suppose that's the other way.
And we also like crawled out of the ocean too, right? When you think of it.
Yeah.
So going back to feeling like it always feels like it's calling me.
Beautiful.
So that's a real not self, not separate, right?
That brings to mind a couple of years ago I did like this audiobook. It was a shamanic journeying sort of thing, And one of the exercises was your creation story. And mine was, I came from water. But it felt like I was the river in this so-called journey. And I'm curious if anyone else wants to share what they connect to in these, in the sense of the elements, like which element kind of rings home to you. If you notice that in the meditation, which one you're like, oh, I'm really enjoying this one.
There's a lot of freedom in water. I think water supports you and you can move anywhere you want to. So that would definitely be where I would feel most free. My mother told me I learnt to swim before I learnt to walk. So I think when you're very small, you're very safe in water.
And we grow. Before we even make it out into this earth, we grow in all these fluids, right?
Right, yeah. Sort of suspended and floating. Well, an idea. Held. I think I like water too. But I connect more with air because I am airy. But actually, I think I need water. Because there's not a lot of water in my astrological chart. It's all fire, and it's mostly air and then fire as well. But I love water, but it needs to be the right temperature. So if it's for swimming, it should be sort of like warm-ish. I don't know. Sometimes it's nice to jump into ice water.
After a bit of a fire element.
Yes. After sauna, yes.
What about, I was just thinking, what about what isn't a four element, like say awareness?
So yeah, that, very good question.
Parallel to like in the outside world.
Yeah, okay. Good question. In some cities it is talked of as another element. So you could think of it as another element. I think the way the Buddha taught the four elements mainly was, as I say, to understand materiality. So to understand the mind was a bit different. I mean, one of the ways to understand it is to know what's not matter. So you know that it's not one of those four elements, right? So it's something else. But there's no actual... the Buddha was very careful about not talking it about what anything is. He would mainly talk about what it was not. So he would say that it is impermanent, it is suffering, it's subject to change, and it is not self. And he also talked about consciousness as six consciousnesses. So there's eye, ear, sight, sound, smell. Eye consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness.
Ear
consciousness and mind consciousness. And mind consciousness is only one. When you say consciousness, I think you mean mind consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is unique to a human being, I would say, or a being, a living being. But there's questions, aren't there, about whether plants have consciousness, because they seem to have something. So which consciousness, we're not quite sure. It seems quite clear that they have touch consciousness. They can feel, right? Because they respond to touch, but it might also be that they respond to sound as well. Whether that's because they have sound conscious or ear consciousness is doubtful. It might be that they can respond to it also through touch, through the vibrations in the atmosphere. But as far as I understand, it's only living beings that have all those six consciousnesses, as in not plants. That's a big question, isn't it? Because people are still finding that they're more and more conscious than we realise.
In Tibetan Buddhism, there's
There's a lovely chapter in a book by Trungpa Rinpoche, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, where he talks about stones not quite having consciousness, but having some sort of aliveness. I'm afraid I can't remember enough about it, but it's very, it's very kind of interesting and quite an attractive idea. I mean, for him, the whole universe and the cosmos, and I expect this is true of Buddhist cosmology generally. You know, there's a kind of aliveness, in all aspects of, the world.
I think the Buddha was not so much concerned with giving definitive answers on whether, say, a stone is consciousness, but more concerned with, like, what kind of perception is going to create a really wholesome relationship with anything, whether it's a stone or a piece of paper or, like, the cushion you sit on. I think there's a lot of scope for almost anthropomorphizing these things and, like, developing a sense of awe and wonder around them. And that kind of does bring them to life in your mind, doesn't it? Whether or not they actually are alive, but if they're alive to you, in a way, that's your reality. So
that's a really good way of putting the what this teaching is about, the sense of awe and wonder. And I'm afraid I can't remember enough about it to really say what was in it. But there's some really poetic and wonderful ideas in there.
I think we've lost that to a great extent, haven't we? This sense of, like, the gratitude, for being alive, having these human bodies and minds and the incredible things we can do with them. And we're just using them. I mean, not us, but, all of us to a degree, but the way that some people are using what we've been given is just creating so much suffering. And it's so important that we can, try to realise that there's a different way to be. To still kind of dream in a way, to envision something better and to put our energies into that something. Because you just don't know how long you have. You just don't know. In the end, it all goes back. I forgot to say that the third meditation in that section in the Satipatthana Sutta is corpse meditation. So it's like the parts, then the elements, then the corpse, and the various degrees of decomposure. And that's because in the end the elements will just go back to nature. And people never know when it's the last day. You never know, do you? You might only have a day or a week or a month. I have a few friends who were diagnosed with cancer in late stages and they only had 3 months. One of my friends, I mean, I kind of knew she didn't have long, but she still had this idea she had 2 years. She didn't have 2 years at all. But she was living with a lot of gratitude and love, I have to say. She was, I think that's when you can really start to appreciate what it is this life affords and just the beauty of all the connections we have and love around us and the so-called basics like safety, which is not a basic. Look at the world, instead of feeling just devastated by it, just remember that safety is like such a privilege, incredible privilege. Like, what are we doing with that? Are we actually trying to make this place safer for others as well because we ought to? If we really value safety.
And also the opportunity with eating, with food. It's like it comes from the earth, and it's and then you're putting the earth back
Thanks
into you,
saying that.
And then the earth comes out of you, and it just, I love that.
It's
so like to, being now here for a time and slowing down, just to be so, the food is like the earth. Just, that's another, not distinction.
And just to eat with the awareness of the four elements in the food, right? That there's temperature, there's texture, there's
and
texture is like the earth.
Then it becomes solid, then it becomes liquid. Can enjoy
it
that.
Goes into the fire in the tummy.
Create some air.
Yes,
and then
create some gas.
And what the bowels do is just phenomenal to think of the size of them and how things move.
Right.
It's just
how it all works.
Yeah. And if you can use it the other way, right, you can say, okay, I've got a lot of cravings, so maybe I can just experience the food not as delicious or salty or vinegary or whatever, but just as elements.
Right.
And like, what does it matter what I have for lunch? It's for elements.
Right. Whether it's ice cream or whether it's... on, like, a cellular level. It's, like, connecting, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be such a taste. Or,
I mean, well, that's what Indian medicine is about, right? I mean, it's not just diet and lifestyle by any means. It's a medical system, and it's very sophisticated. Mm. But, you know, basically, if you notice that... This is extremely basic, right? But if you notice that you have too much fire element, then guess what you eat? Something with a lot of, you know... with a cool, they call it a guna or a virya, is like the energy of the thing is cool, and it has an effect of cooling down the fires. Right. So they say actually eat sweet food first, because sweet is heavier, it's more water element, it's cooler. Mm-hmm. So you can adapt. Like mine is a bit slow and a bit sluggish, and so I eat like digestive stuffs, which increase the fire element.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can adapt. And the ancient Indians, they devised this medical system through their own experience. They didn't have... I mean, they were just taking herbs from the trees and the bushes and combining them in all kinds of different formats and powders and liquids and... what do you call them? Like kashayas. They're like fermented preparations. And all kinds of things with many herbs, like 20, 30 different herbs. And they knew the properties of each and how each would balance the antagonistic qualities in another herb. It's just phenomenal. They felt all this.
Mm.
And now this so-called modern science comes along and says, there's an active principle in turmeric called curcumin.
Mm.
And they extract it. But originally in Indian medicine, you never extracted the active principle because the whole herb contained all these properties that would like prevent any side effects. And you could have any amount of it.
And that we grow up right next to. We're so wired for the earth of what comes into us.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the idea of, like you're saying, if you try to separate things out, just to this piece of something I was reading about, like the tomato, like the goo that's around the seed of a tomato actually helps with platelet formation.
Wow.
You know, there's like that level of specificity of
it's just, amazing.
You know, the connection between...
Yeah.
Us and, you know...
Right, because we grew out of this earth, right? We came later, much, much later than some of the trees and the mosses. And It's really late, actually, isn't it, in the kind of whole evolution planet, like the last 5 minutes.
Going back to what you said at the beginning, I'll see if I can say this cohesively about, practicing with the four elements and remembering appreciating our relationship, right, with the environment around us. And all of those things had to happen in order for us to come into being, right? We needed the plants, we needed the clean water, we needed the food, you know, whatever was here to nourish our bodies.
Yeah, right. And so if we mess them up, then we won't be able to be. It's obvious, isn't it? Yeah. Because our life is sustained and depends on the four elements externally, this is what produced this kind of body, and so if that changes because we ruin it, destroy it, then this changes and maybe can't survive. To live in harmony with the nature is, it's really to practice the Dhamma, isn't it? I mean, we're trying to understand nature. The Dhamma is just trying to understand the laws of nature, basically. Causality. Yeah, it's a good season to get close to nature. Go and sit under a cherry tree. If you haven't got one, you can come and sit under ours. We've got a nice one. It's just starting to bloom. And there's some lovely parks and rivers in Oxford.